Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. The Dash Radio app completely free in your provider's store. That's Apple or Android. Dashradio.com as well on the Nothing But Net channel. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Well, Matt, thank you for holding down the fort yesterday. I really enjoyed your conversation, just recapping the Celtics game and also talking about LaVine and Dunn's struggles. I want to get into some of that today. But obviously, the most important topic to talk about today and a couple other things we have to do. But obviously, this memo, this note from Adam Silver talking about warning the Chicago Bulls of sitting Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday in street clothes. That's the first thing I want to get into today. But also, we're going to take your mailbag questions towards the middle of the show and also maybe preview the Memphis Grizzlies game we got going on tonight. And then if we have some time, maybe talk about a Dunn and LaVine sort of leadership struggle that's going to happen over the course of the next year. A really good article from Vincent Goodwill this morning that I want to touch on if we've got some time. But Matt, how are you doing?
Doing all right, Jordan. Looking forward to this giant epic tankathon battle we got on deck tonight between the Bulls and the Grizzlies. I mean, the Grizzlies are showing everyone how it's done right now who's trying to tank. They have lost 14 straight games. And we'll take a quick look at this matchup later in today's show. But just this morning, looking at this Grizzlies roster, woof. Woof.
Yeah, and when we were just talking about it, it's like, the Memphis Grizzlies haven't won a game since January, 14 in a row. And like, granted, they had, I think their last five games, they were within 8 to 10 points of each loss and they were in the game to the end. But seriously, haven't won a game since January 29th against the Suns.
Yeah, that's not great. Or, you know, depending on how you look at it, that's really great.
So, I mean, like, that's why I always say that you take into perspective of what we have to watch. And then think about all the Memphis Grizzlies fans or teams that literally just look up and down their roster and you go, boy, that's not going to be anything good for a while. Like, kind of makes me feel a little bit better about our situation here in Chicago. But yeah, the Memphis Grizzlies, they're doing it the best out of anybody. And it looks like, barring some kind of miracle at the end of this stretch of 19 games, the Memphis Grizzlies are probably going to be somewhere in that top three, if not with that number one pick. So them and Atlanta are trying to battle it out, as the Chicago Bulls will take on both of those teams this week, along with the Detroit Pistons on Friday, and then taking on the Atlanta Hawks on Sunday. But that's not what you called for. And obviously, we want to talk about this report that came out late last night about the Bulls being warned of tanking by sitting healthy players, including Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday. So this note and this memo coming down from Adam Silver, this is on top of a league-wide memo that was sent out not even a week ago to all teams saying that they don't want to sacrifice the integrity of the league and that there will be no leniency when teams are trying to adamantly tank, and there will be severe repercussions if they do decide to tank and they start to be open about it. We saw this with the Dallas Dallas Mavericks and Mark Cuban going on a podcast and blatantly straight up saying, hey, you know what? It's better off if we lose so we can get a draft pick. Obviously, they got hammered with a fine. But Matt, give me your initial reaction to this report about the Bulls not playing Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday, and now the league kind of telling them, you know what? Yeah, this isn't a good look and you can't do this.
I think it's bogus. I think it's unfair and I think it's stupid. Look, there's a difference between Mark Cuban going on a podcast and saying, yeah, we're trying to lose. It's in our best interest to lose right now. And to their credit, whether it's John Paxson or Fred Hoiberg, they know, and they're smarter than that, that it's not a good idea to come out and say, yeah, we're trying to lose games. I mean, the closest that they ever have come to that is Paxson after the Jimmy Butler trade saying next season will not be measured by wins and losses, but about the development and evaluation of these young players that we got back in the trade and some of the young players that we have on our existing roster. So not being measured by wins and losses. And again, he was kind of saying that specifically about a question with regard to Fred Hoiberg and his coaching performance. So the Bulls, whether it's the front office or Fred Hoiberg and his coaching staff, have done a good job as to completely avoid talking about tanking, using the word tank. Fred Hoiberg saying, I'm still trying to put the best group out there possible to win games. Obviously, with the post-All-Star break rotation change, wanting to get a look at some of these young players who haven't got a chance to play, that shifted a little bit because Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday probably would be giving you a better opportunity to win and be competitive on any given night than, say, Felicio and Campaign getting a lot of minutes. Still, to me, this is not the same thing, and it's not fair. Look, obviously Paxson said that Holiday and Lopez were presented with multiple options as far as how they wanted to proceed when they wanted to start giving guys like Nwaba, Felicio, Vonleh, and Campaign more minutes. And as opposed to playing reduced roles coming off the bench, Lopez and Holiday, two proud veterans, both said, you know what, we get what you're trying to do here. I would prefer to just sit as an inactive than to play 10 to 12 minutes off the bench. They were given multiple options, and they chose that what they wanted to do was let the team give more minutes to these young players and sit. I'm sorry, but why is that any of the league's business? If the players and their bosses, the coaching staff and the front office, all collectively agree to say, here's what we're trying to do with the last 20 to 25 games of this season. We want to give some minutes to some of these young guys, get a better perspective for what we're trying to do this offseason, moving into next season. Why is that the league's business?
I completely agree with you. And that was my biggest point here when I saw this. And the fact, too, there's multiple layers to this, and I don't know what it is about the league. If this is just a push in the last, 2 weeks of now, you really see teams talking about this. The fan bases are talking about this all the time, and I don't know if that's what's gotten Adam Silver sort of, I guess the attention has been drawn more to tanking teams in the last few weeks than maybe ever before. And it's obvious. I look around the league, and like you had said, Mark Cuban going out and flat out saying that they're trying to lose to get a better draft pick. Obviously, you can't do that. So, and it's not like anybody around the league doesn't understand what the Bulls are doing here. Like, they've done it all by the books, though. They've done it by the way the NBA has asked them to do it, not to come out and blatantly say you're tanking. And for the Bulls situation, I don't think they're really doing that. And they haven't done that all season long. Like, Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday have played all season up until the All-Star break. And the fact that the Bulls aren't even in the top five right now in terms of worst teams in the league or highest chance of getting a lottery pick, I think it's frustrating. And the one thing I go back to, and this was written by our friend Nick Friedel of ESPN, and he had a quote from John Paxson, which made me even more mad at the league about this because of what he had said and what he had followed the rules by the NBA's standards. So this is what John Paxson had to say. He said, after the All-Star break, we had communication with the league office about Robin and Justin's role, said Bulls Executive Vice President John Paxson. After healthy dialogue, the league determined that their situations fall into the quote-unquote player rest policy. We respect the communication and cooperative dialogue with the league and will adhere to their recommendations going forward. So John Paxson has said it over and over and over again. And we, at times this season alone, we've ripped him for it, saying that he's not calling it a tank and he's not calling it a rebuild. He's calling it player development and getting a look at some of these young guys, and they're doing it by the books. So that's my thing, is like, Adam Silver, I don't understand why he's allowed to have his hands in the day-to-day player, I guess, picking players off of each team and saying, no, you've got to play that guy or you've got to play that guy. Like, I get it. Robin Lopez and Justin Holliday would obviously help this team if they were playing in a starting role. But to me, I think it gets really, really messed up when you start having the commissioner tell teams certain players that they need to play on a certain night. Like, Robin Lopez and Justin Holliday could play 5 minutes a night. Would that be a problem with Adam Silver? Like, they could go in for the last 2 minutes of every night and be active on that bench, and the Bulls could continue still doing what they're doing right now. So I just don't understand why he's concerned with a team like the Bulls, who decided, and the players decided on top of that. Robin Lopez and Justin Holliday, like you had just said that they're doing it for the betterment of the team, letting the Bulls figure out what else that they have on this roster going forward and going into the summer. So I think it's coming to a sticky situation where Adam Silver, I think, at this point, kind of overstepped his boundaries in terms of what teams are doing. And whether or not this was the Bulls or not, he could have said this to any other team, and I think it still would irritate me in terms of having his hands in situations that I don't think he should necessarily be concerned with. Or this isn't the approach that I think trying to resolve the whole tanking situation in the NBA. I just don't think this method, the way that he's going about it right now, is exactly the way that the NBA should be going about it.
I mean, and if you want to make the argument that the Bulls are purposefully trying to lose games, there, other than sitting Holiday and Lopez, there is no evidence to that. Just think back to the game last Friday against Dallas, a team that the Bulls would absolutely have benefited from in the sake of quote-unquote tanking if they had lost that game. And they were down big in the fourth quarter of that game, and instead of putting a hodgepodge group of crap players out there, it was the Bulls' key young guys, and led by Bobby Portis, who made a comeback and, you know, had an 18-point swing in the fourth quarter to win that game. Is that losing on purpose? No, it's not. Quite the opposite. And Dallas, not only is Cuban going on podcast saying, yeah, we're trying to lose, but Rick Carlisle has actually been putting their worst group of five plus minus combinations on the floor late in games. There was an article about that on ESPN like a week or two ago, that they are actively taking their worst collective lineup and throwing it into the fourth quarter of close games. That is losing on purpose. The Bulls just beat that team by trying to win coming from behind in the fourth quarter of a close game. So the Bulls, no, I'm sorry, they are not trying to lose games. And Fred Hoiberg has said that since day one. The other thing that I want to bring up is that all of this stems from the player rest rule that you alluded to just a minute ago. And the fact that Greg Popovich, with the dynasty Spurs and the aging Spurs in recent years of Parker, Ginobili, and Duncan, has become infamous for resting healthy veteran players, especially late in the regular season, gearing up for deep playoff runs. LeBron James, whether it was Miami or now being back in Cleveland, has started to do this similar thing as he ages and gets later into the later stages of his career. Dwayne Wade as well. And the NBA doesn't like that because they don't like the big-name primetime stars to be healthy but resting for nationally televised games. I'm sorry, but who out there, other than Bulls fans and Grizzlies fans, is tuning in to watch this game tonight? Because the answer is nobody. The league is not losing money because the Bulls aren't playing Robin Lopez and Justin Holliday. And even if you want to take it to the closer zoomed-in focus of Chicago and the Chicago market and Chicago Bulls ticket sales, the Bulls this season, despite trading away their big-name players and starting over, are still leading the league in attendance as they do every year. And are any Bulls players or are any Bulls fans out there saying, you know what, I was thinking about buying tickets to the game tonight, but you know, they're sitting Robin Lopez and Justin Holliday, and that makes me mad, so I'm not going to go to the game. No! If Bulls fans are buying tickets to the games this season, it's because they want to see LaVine and Dunn and Markkanen play, because those are the guys that we all care about. And those guys are not being sat on the bench while healthy. None of this makes any sense to me.
Yeah, between that and, like, obviously, it probably wasn't a good look to have Robin Lopez and Justin Holliday in street clothes. Okay, I get that. Like, that's probably not a good look for the Bulls. And if anything, if you had to pick one thing, like, I feel like the Bulls, in terms of what they were doing and, like, the following the rules of the NBA of, in terms of not talking about tanking, they've done everything the NBA has asked them to do. And I feel like just for them to pick a bone about this, especially with the team that sits with the eighth worst record in the NBA, like, going and looking at Dallas for what they did, I get that, like, completely, with Mark Cuban just coming out and saying, and also the analytic part of that too, which is I find weird too, because now the NBA is implementing their statisticians to look at the worst combination of players of a five-man rotation out on the floor. They're monitoring that among tanking teams now, which I think is crazy. Like, if you're allowed to, as the NBA, to factor in what would be the worst lineup for every team, and then you're going to go and micromanage those teams and tell them, well, you can't put this lineup on the floor for, like, I feel like that just opens up a whole can of worms that should not be opened. And, like, I understand Adam Silver's trying to change the way that the bottom half of the league is playing, the race to the bottom to try and get draft picks. And I think, for one, the NBA's draft lottery, especially the first 10 picks, I think are one of the most overrated things in sports. I think more oftentimes than not, draft picks are busts. And I think, for whatever reason, in the NBA, draft picks are held to such a high standard. And more often than not, these picks are not hits. And especially in the top five, like, if you go through the top five over the last 15 years, you could probably find a lot more players that didn't turn out to be all-stars or superstars in this league than ones that did turn out to be that. So I just think that Adam Silver and the league are barking up the wrong tree and trying to resolve this tanking situation and are spending so much time focusing on this when there's a lot of other things that are going on that they could be worrying about. And this brings up another topic too, Matt. I think about it this way. Okay, if you're so concerned about the integrity of the league and the parity of the competition in the league and not wanting teams to lose, why did you let Kevin Durant go to Golden State after Golden State had just won a championship? Why did you let that happen? Why do you let superstars combine and play this role of, oh, I'm going to go to this team, so you two go to this team too? The collusion that goes on among the players, then why does Adam Silver allow that to happen? Like, see, that to me, like,
it's a fair point. Considering the league blocked the Chris Paul to Lakers trade, I don't know, however many years ago, the 6-7 years ago that was, in a similar situation, they wanted to prevent a super team kind of trade from happening, a move from happening, and they blocked it. So if they were willing to do that then, why weren't they willing to do that when, you know, Durant wanted to go create a super team in Golden State?
So that's what I don't understand here is, like, You can't just pick and choose the parts of the league that you are trying to fix and then hammer down on those teams. Like, tanking's been going on for, what, 7, 6, 7, 8 years now? And then now all of a sudden they have this ultimate push to try and get teams to fairly do this. Like, I get the lottery is changing after this year, so why not make this more of a pressing issue next year when you are changing the way the lottery odds are going to be and changing the format of the lottery? Like, I understand that you don't want the bottom half of your teams tanking in your league. It's not good for the league. It's not good for the fans. But to be honest with you, NBA fans are tapped into what's going on, even with the bottom half of the league. Like, the most buzz that is coming around any professional sports is the NBA right now. Like, even people are excited watching young players on some of these tanking teams. Like, that's causing more of a stir than some of the biggest headlines in the NFL, the NBA, or the NFL, the MLB, or the NHL. So I just don't understand what the concern is, the heavy concern on teams trying to figure out what they want to do with some of these young players that they have on their roster and, like, micromanaging what players have to be actively playing on your roster. Like, I just don't understand that whole factor to it. And I would like an explanation from somebody in the league that would tell me, hey, this is the reason why we're telling people not to sit their players. And like, what is the reason behind that in terms of like rules, in terms of the NBA? Like, who's breaking a rule that says you can't sit certain players on your roster to get a better look at some other guys? Like, what part of the NBA is breaking that rule? And like, the Bulls haven't come out and said that they're actively tanking or any of that. Like, obviously, as Bulls fans, we know that they're trying to do that, trying to get one of those top five picks. But at the same time, they're not breaking any rules. So I just don't understand what the all of a sudden in the last 3 weeks, this all of a sudden this hard crackdown on tanking teams with only, what, 19, 18 games left in the season? I just don't get it. And that thing with the Kevin Durant thing that I thought about yesterday just makes me even more aggravated. And I can go even back. I know Adam Silver wasn't the commissioner when Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and LeBron James all went to Miami back in 2010. I get that. But at the same time, like, you let Kevin Durant go to a team that has Steph Curry, generational player, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green all playing in their primes, and then you let one of the best players in the league go to that same team in his prime. Like, if you're trying to mix up parity, you got to try to find a way to prevent that from happening. Because I'm sorry, all the teams that are tanking right now know that they can't compete with a team like Golden State or Cleveland. So what's the point? Like,
yeah, exactly. Well, like, why did the Bulls trade Jimmy Butler? Mostly because they knew that with Jimmy Butler as their best player in his prime and for the next 5 years, if they were to keep him going into the back end of his prime, they probably wouldn't be good enough to beat a LeBron James-led team or whichever was the best team coming out of the West. A lot of teams have made that realization and have tried to gear themselves towards being competitive in the next phase of when the NBA parity has redefined itself. And I don't see why teams should be punished. If what the league is worried about is their image of, oh, we don't want to reward tanking, and we want our fans to be happy, and we want our fans to be treated to the best possible product when they pay their hard-earned money to come to an NBA game, or when they use their hard-earned money to buy a cable subscription to watch these nationally televised games, the Bulls are not hurting the league in either of those areas. The Bulls had one nationally televised game this year. Already happened. Bye. Over. Done. No more. So the Bulls aren't hurting the NBA's TV ratings. And as I said, and no offense to Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday, but Bulls fans aren't going to the United Center to watch them play this season. No. It's done, LaVine and Markkanen. So they're not hurting the Bulls fan base, and they're not hurting the NBA by doing this. So why the hell does Adam Silver care? He's already made this draft lottery reform going into place next year, and we'll see what kind of effect that has on de-incentivizing teams to tank. But telling a team that they have to play certain players, I'm sorry, I absolutely think that that's overstepping their boundaries.
Especially to bark up a tree against a team that's the eighth worst record. Like, I'm looking at it right now. The Bulls are 21-42. They sit with, if it stayed the way it was right now, the Bulls would most likely probably have the eighth pick in the upcoming lottery. Like, out of all teams, why are you barking up the tree of the Chicago Bulls, who turned around Jimmy Butler, got three young assets that they've been playing all season? Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen, and even when Nico Mirotic was here, Nico Mirotic was coming off the bench with Bobby Portis, and they were winning games. It's not like they were sitting these guys all season long. And like, the thing with LaVine too, like, they're not playing him on back-to-backs. They're being easy with him. But the nights that he is out there, he's playing 30, 35 minutes a night. So I don't understand, and I'm with you too. And I think we're both in complete agreement. And I would hope a lot of Bulls fans out there listening to this would be in the same agreement too. It's like, why? I just don't understand. And there's got to be an explanation. Somebody's got to ask this question. Why are they concerned with the player amount of minutes that some of these guys are playing? Like, it blows my mind. I haven't ever seen a league tell an individual team, hey, you know what? You can't sit this guy. You can't play the, you've got to play this guy and this guy. Like I've never seen a commissioner ask teams or tell teams or warn them that if they don't play certain players that they're going to be fined or penalized or it's something to a degree that that's going to ultimately hurt them. I just don't understand. I understand from the point of you don't want tanking to happen anymore, but I don't understand how you can sit back and say that that's good for the league by picking and choosing which teams you talk to and warn about this possible tanking, especially the Bulls, who've done it by the books pretty much all season and haven't come out and said that they're trying to tank. Like that 3-20 start was a 3-20 start because the roster was terrible, because you didn't have LaVine, you didn't have Markkanen, and they went on that little bit of a run where they won a bunch of games. They've been competitive in every game. You could pick out probably a handful of games, 6 or 7 games in the last 2 months where the Bulls are just completely blown out, but they've been in a lot more games than some of these other tanking teams that are here that are losing games by 40, 50 points. So I just don't get it, and I would like an explanation either from the NBA or somebody that's close to the NBA's office of communications and say, like, how does this make the league any better, and how does this stop teams and prevent teams from tanking, and how do you not upset the rest of the teams in the league by telling which teams what players that they have to play and what players can't play?
Yeah, absolutely. And just as a wrap to this conversation and an update for all of you Bulls fans listening, as we're recording this, we just got word, Casey Johnson of the Chicago Tribune reported that Justin Holiday will start against Memphis tonight, but that Robin Lopez will remain inactive. And that is a detail about this rest rule, which is in effect for the first time this season, that you can rest one healthy veteran at home, but you cannot rest more than one. So sounds like Holiday is starting but not expecting to start because he knows the Bulls are still trying to evaluate these younger players. So Holiday will start but is not expecting to play big minutes. Lopez once again remains inactive tonight.
Very interesting. I'm curious to see how this plays out now towards the rest of the end of the season. Obviously only 18 games, but for a lot of tanking teams, these 18 games are precious. Like you look at the teams with the worst record up into where the Bulls sit, the eighth worst record. I mean, they're only separated by 3.5 games, and the Bulls are only separated from that number three slot by a game and a half. So this has got a lot of implications to it for these teams and where they're going to slot themselves in the lottery coming up this summer. So I'm interested to see how this plays out and whether or not there's any backlash from the Bulls in terms of what they're doing. And if the front office for the Bulls are upset about the micromanaging of their team. So definitely be interesting to continue to monitor and see if any other teams get hammered down for sitting players or things that they're doing that might promote tanking around the league. But Matt, I want to get to some mailbag questions. I know we spent a long time on that topic, but I felt like it was a good and necessary topic to talk about with Bulls fans. So I want to get to some questions, though, some user questions. The text line, once again, has been amazing. You guys have been sending texts in nonstop and questions, comments, everything in between. So that has been fantastic for us. Once again, I want to remind you guys that the number is 331-979-1369. You can text us and leave us voicemails there. 331-979-1369. As always, you can reach us on social media. You can tweet at us at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, or at Locked On Bulls. Or if you want to make a comment and jump into the discussion on Facebook, you can do that as well at facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Like us over there. And remember, continue to subscribe. But all of your comments, make sure you're hitting that text line, that voicemail line up, or hit us up on social media. So Matt, the first question I have for you, this comes from a texter, and they talk about Lauri Markkanen, and it says, Lauri Markkanen's usage seems real low for somebody as offensively skilled as him. Do you have any thoughts on this and why this is happening?
Kind of not. He's been an afterthought in some of these games, and I know there was that a game. There was a back-to-back stretch, not literally back-to-back, but two games in a row where Markkanen had only, like, you know, somewhere between 5 and 8 shot attempts, and Fred Hoiberg said, this is unacceptable, we've got to get Markkanen more looks. And then following that string of two games where he shot almost nothing, they did go to him more frequently and are trying to find him looks. I think there is, and this is, you know, something that I talked a little bit about yesterday, the trio of Dunn, Levine, and Markkanen still have not played that many games together because of various injuries and time being out. Markkanen with paternity leave, Dunn with the concussion and the broken finger early in the season, and of course Levine waiting half the season to come back from his ACL. I mean, we still have only, you know, you can count on one, maybe two hands, the number of games that these three have played together now. I think there's still some chemistry issues figuring out exactly where on the floor Dunn and Levine, the two primary ball handlers, are getting looks for Markkanen, when they can get him in advantageous mismatches, particularly down on the post, because we have seen Markkanen be willing to use that spot on the floor more aggressively as the season's gone on. But I think another factor is that, you know, we talked about this maybe a week or two ago when Markkanen was going through his shooting slump. And of the three of the, you know, Markkanen, Levine, Dunn trio, Markkanen did have the most effective game against Boston on Monday when most of that team played like absolute dog shit. Markkanen still, to me, looks like a guy who's hit the rookie wall. I mean, it's whether it's the shooting slump or the fatigue, he just doesn't look like the same wow, impressive, rising star potential rookie that we saw through stretches of the beginning parts of the season. And it could be a combination of rookie wall exhaustion and Fred Hoiberg trying to make more, take larger effort and going to greater lengths to get Levine comfortable in his role and get Dunn comfortable in his role. And I feel like before either of Dunn or Levine were able to find a stride, Markkanen found his. So it could just be that Hoiberg is not necessarily super worried about this little slump that Markkanen is in and would much rather lock down the plans moving forward and the chemistry moving forward of Dunn and Levine, who will be the primary ball handlers, not Markkanen. It's, you know, all right, let's make sure that Dunn and Levine know what they're doing, and then we'll get Markkanen back into the fold. To me, that's as best as way as I can think to describe what's going on with Markkanen right now.
Yeah, I would agree with you, too, and I think you brought up the best point of it all, is that Markkanen, Levine, and Dunn have only played, what, 20 games? Like, if you throw Levine in there, they've only played 20 games together. So I think this is going to take a lot longer than we all were hoping for. And it's going to take that, like you said, chemistry, like between trying to feed all of these guys. And like Dunn's obviously going to want to try and get up shots. Levine, he will take a shot at will. Like Levine's out there trying to do what he does best, and that's score. And I think maybe sometimes Lauri Markkanen is forgotten. One thing I wanted to throw this out at you is Lauri Markkanen has had his worst month of the season so far in February. He shot only 39% from the field. He was averaging about 12 shots a game. His three-point percentage in February was awful. It was 17.6%. He had the lowest points per game, too, that he was scoring at 11.9. Obviously, he missed a couple games because he had a child. So that could factor in, too, as well as like kind of missing, I don't know, it was like about a week and a half of games. And he even brought that up, and so did Chris Dunn when he came back from that injury. He said, you know, we were hitting a stride, we were feeling good, and then I got injured, and then Lowry had his baby, and we all missed a couple games, and then we were just trying to get back into the routine. So I can see how that can kind of throw them off. But yeah, I would like to see Lowry Markkanen be a little bit more involved, and I think that's just going to take some time to figure out the strengths of not only Chris Dunn, Zach Levine, and Lauri Markkanen, but some of these other guys that they have on the roster. But yeah, February, I think, was just a down month for Lauri Markkanen. Like, he was shooting at his lowest percentage since December. Lauri Markkanen was taking a ton of shots in December, only shot 38.3% from the field, 31% from three. I think I'm a little bit worried about his three-point shooting. I know that's going to come, and he's a big man, and things happen. You go on slides. But yeah, 17.6%. shooting from three in February was not good. I want to see him get a little bit more involved, and I want to see, and maybe this will develop over the summer between him and Levine or him and Dunn, the pick and roll, the pick and pop. They need to work on that more. And I think with Lowry's outstanding shooting, I think they can create so many mismatches, not only to free up shots for LaVine, but free up shots for Dunn and for Markkanen. You start to space the floor for all these guys. You've got two guys who can knock down shots at will, and like in LaVine and in Markkanen. So I'd like to see a little bit more chemistry there. Obviously, it's going to take some time. It's probably going to take more than just this season and probably more than just half of next season. Like, we're going to see this slowly start to turn together. So I wouldn't be too concerned about Lauri Markkanen's usage right now. I think more so too, thinking about the fact that they want to get more looks at some of these other guys that they have and figure out whether or not they're going to be on this roster. That might be taking away from shots that maybe Markkanen would normally take back in December, January, and even into February. So I think that plays a factor into it too, but I wouldn't be too concerned about Lauri Markkanen. Like you said, that rookie wall's there, especially the kid's only 20 years old too. He's not used to playing all these games. So I'm not sitting here making excuses for him. I'm just saying there's going to be some ups and downs in this, and you're going to see it not only from Lauri Markkanen, but you're going to see from other guys like Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn before it's all said and done.
Absolutely. And I mean, I would even go so far as to say I'm not worried at all about Markkanen's shooting touch. You said, you know, the 3-point percentage in that month was, you know, woefully bad, and it was, but I think that was just a weird yips shooting slump, and that happens. But I still think that Markkanen has maybe the purest shooting stroke of any guy that came out of that 2017 draft. And as he develops comfort and confidence moving on in his NBA career, I think you will see him turn into a, if not premier Splash Brothers level of 3-point specialist, that will absolutely be a lethal and vital part of his game. So let's move on to another question. This one comes through our text line, an area code 317. This is an interesting one, Jordan. I can't wait to get your perspective on this. Speaking of Lauri Markkanen, was Nico Mirotic re-signed this past offseason because the front office didn't think Markkanen would develop this quickly? Your thoughts?
Yeah, this is an interesting question, and I know, like, obviously Nico Mirotic isn't here yet. I think he was re-signed because literally no other team out there wanted any part of him, and I think they got him on a good deal. And in hindsight, you could turn it into saying, okay, the front office knew more than maybe we all thought, and this summer maybe they saw something out of him that maybe we didn't know. I think it was kind of a mixture of not only Lauri Markkanen not knowing really what Lauri Markkanen would be this year, and If Nico didn't get punched out, Lauri Markkanen would be coming off the bench all season. Like, that was a fact. And so I think for Mirotic, I think it was a combination of them kind of not wanting to say that they were completely missed on Nico or that they were ready to give up on him. And it paid off. They got the Pelicans pick. They got that first round pick. I know that pick now isn't where we thought it was going to be now coming into the end of the season. But still, you turned Nico Mirotic's, what, $13 million contract with an option for next year into a first round pick, which is huge. And that was one of the biggest deals at the deadline. So in hindsight, you can maybe pat the front office on the back for saying maybe that they saw something. I just think it was more so them thinking, hey, let's give it one more shot here, fully healthy, an opportunity to get the ball a lot more and not playing with Jimmy Butler. Let's give it one more season because it's not going to cost us a whole ton, which it didn't, because if you remember back to the summer, Nico Mirotic was asking for $16 to $20 million a year from a team, and nobody was going to give him that. And so the Bulls got him on a pretty solid deal. They were able to expand that and use it as a trade and leverage piece to a team that was developing. And I will say this, too. I think bringing Mirotic back, the fight that happened, I think he got the best out of Bobby Portis, too, which is weird to say. But the game that Bobby Portis has developed this year, I think he got the best out of them. So I would say, if I had to answer the question, I would say they probably brought Mirotic back saying that they wanted to give him one last shot. They needed a position to have a score, a stretch four like him. And I don't think they wanted to press on Lauri Markkanen if things went bad. Obviously, they didn't. So to me, I think it was just a mixed bag of a lot of different things. They got him on a cheap contract. They didn't want to give up on him. And there's probably some factor in, too, that they didn't think Lauri Markkanen was going to play at the level that he has played for most of the season.
Yeah, I mean, if that fight between Nico and Bobby doesn't happen, Nico's the starting four. at the beginning of the season. And obviously that was one of the points of contention and why Bobby felt slighted. Some of the other Bulls players who were, you know, working together, working out together in the offseason while Nico was doing his own thing, felt slighted that he kind of just came in at the midnight hour and seized that starting role for himself. But in Nico's eyes, he earned that. And I think from the perspective of the Bulls front office, he earned that. I mean, I'm glad that they didn't sign him to some huge multi-year deal, because that he did not deserve, and it would have been impossible given the situation. Say that everything else played out the way it did. You know, they had to pick up Nico's option to make the trade with New Orleans happen, because Nico had that trade veto in his pocket and he used it the first time they tried to make that deal happen. Could you imagine if the Bulls tried to move Nico because they didn't want to commit to him after this, you know, interaction, this altercation, and they had signed him to like a 4-year deal with a bunch of money on it? Would have been virtually impossible. And meanwhile, they were excited about taking Markkanen with that 7th overall pick, but the plan was not to start him. And were it not for Nico having a broken face and Bobby serving a suspension, that would not have been the case. So I think absolutely. I mean, there are multiple elements to why they signed Nico and what their expectations were for Markkanen, and those certainly are intertwined and interrelated. I think, obviously, right now you look at the winning streak that the Pelicans are on. They won again last night. Anthony Davis had a monster game. I think they've won 9 in a row. And all of a sudden, what looked like it may have been a pick in the mid to late teens for the Bulls is now, I think, right around 25th. So that Nico trade with New Orleans doesn't look as great as it did. But I still think, all things considered, when you want Markkanen and the rookie to be getting as much playing time as possible, regardless of what it was that kept Nico in Chicago for the short term coming into this 2017-18 season, I think it's best for all parties that what happened, and that Nico is elsewhere and Markkanen can be that guy at that position in Fred's offense moving forward.
All right, last one to wrap this up here, Matt. This comes from Twitter, from Matt on Twitter. He says, what do you guys think about the Bulls drafting Marvin Bagley, Kevin Knox, or Wendell Carter Jr. at 8-10? What's the best fit and the most upside? Matt, I want to touch on this real quick, because for those who didn't listen to the interview I did with Cole Zwicker, we talked about all three of these guys and pretty in depth in terms of their strengths and weaknesses on the court, how they would develop into players maybe coming into the NBA, what they would turn into. And I thought one of the biggest and most interesting comps for Marvin Bagley especially was that Cole said that he could be some type of Amare Stoudemire type of player, obviously long and athletic and can do some types of things that maybe some other traditional centers can't do. Wendell Carter Jr. is an interesting player. I don't necessarily think that he fits sort of what the Bulls are trying to do. And you can even say that about Marvin Bagley. I think putting him and pairing him next to Lauri Markkanen together, a guy that's 6'11", 235, doesn't play center normally. And I don't know how that fit would be in terms of rebounding and also rim protection. Your rim protection would probably be pretty awful if Marvin Bagley and Lauri Markkanen are out on the floor. I know Marvin Bagley has protected the rim pretty well for Duke this season, but college basketball is a whole hell of a lot different than the NBA is. And in terms of Kevin Knox too, I asked Cole about Kevin Knox and said, who's the most overrated player right now in the top 15? And he actually pointed to Kevin Knox. He said, he's an interesting player, but he's a one-dimensional player. He's a scorer, and when he's not scoring, he doesn't do a whole lot else for you. So I think in terms of upside, obviously you can't go wrong with Marvin Bagley. The dude's 6'11". He's got a wingspan of 7'4". He's 235, and he's only 19 years old. So if the Bulls got a chance to have Marvin Bagley sitting there, I would not be opposed to it at all. I think it's going to take a lot more work on Fred Hoiberg's part to kind of develop that relationship between him and Lauri Markkanen and see what fits there. But if I had to pick somebody, like, I want the Bulls to take a wing. Like, the Bulls desperately need wing players, guys that can be a 3-and-D player. And if you fall between that, like we said, 8-11 spot where the Bulls kind of currently hang out right now, and you don't end up in that top 5 or 6, I would say take a chance on a guy that's going to be a wing player that maybe that they're confident about that ended up sliding, and somebody that isn't just a brand named guy from a big time blue blood school, like maybe Kevin Knox is, or somebody like Miles Bridges at Michigan State. So I think the Bulls have, I'm pretty sure that they've scoped anybody and any player that's going to end up somewhere between 1 and 15. If I had to say the most overrated player, though, would be, I would agree with Kevin Knox at Kentucky. But if you're going to get Marvin Bagley and he ends up sliding somewhere between 5 and 6, and if Jaren Jackson Jr. ends up rising up the boards, especially with the tournament going on, I wouldn't be that all frustrated.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I think, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see whose stock rises and whose stock falls as we make our way through the tourney and then into, you know, the NBA draft combine and those interviews and the, you know, the physical, you know, physical exams that they go through. And I know that the Bulls weigh interviews into their decision a good deal, and they're, you know, all about drafting high character guys. I don't disagree with you that I think given where the Bulls project to be, if nothing extreme changes, and say they do end up drafting somewhere between 5 and 10 as opposed to 1 through 5, there are some interesting wing prospects there, and this Bulls team desperately needs a wing player. You know, both of the Bridges, Miles and Mikhail, you mentioned Kevin Knox. I'm very hesitant and would be very worried and skeptical if the Bulls were to spend, say, the 7th or 8th pick on Trae Young or Colin Sexton, the two top projected point guards in this draft, even though we're all still unsure about Chris Dunn. And as far as these bigs that you're talking about, it seems like Marvin Bagley has lost a considerable amount of momentum, and it's, you know, DeAndre Ayton is the unquestioned number one among bigs. And even, you know, Michigan State's Jaren Jackson has leapfrogged Bagley in a lot of people's mocks. And then, you know, some people have Mo Bamba from Texas also above Bagley at this point. You also mentioned Wendell Carter. I mean, I think that the Bulls would be best served taking one of those bigs that's still on the board or taking a wing. And I don't necessarily know if I would be upset if they took one over the other. Basically, I would want them either with one of those interesting wing prospects or one of those bigs to go best available. That's what I want them to do in this upcoming draft. And I still ideally would like them to move from 8th, where they are now, up to maybe 4th or 5th. That's still reasonable. And then you're talking about maybe getting one of Ayton, Jaren Jackson, Porter, Bagley, Doncic, or Bamba. You know, those are the six names at the top right now, in my opinion, and the Bulls still have a shot at getting one of them. If they don't, yeah, you take the consolation prize of one of those wings that you were just mentioning, and maybe one of those point guards. That's the situation as it sits for the Bulls right now.
Yeah, I would just want to read you real quick some strengths and weaknesses from NBA scouts in terms of what Marvin Bagley is. And so here's just a couple of the comps that they were given. It says, great athlete, gifted with tremendous coordination and fluidity at his size, plays well above the rim with great body control. Finished second in scoring on the Nike EYBL with 25.8 points per game. So that was in his high school AAU tournament. Can score from multiple spots on the floor. Shows some variety. Can score in a different way on each possession. Has range to the three-point line, as well as the ability to score in the post. Can distribute and drive out of the post as well. Good slashing ability. Excels when driving to the basket. And some of the weaknesses that they tout him with, it says, while he can only do a bit of everything, he still has much room to improve on those areas and isn't totally polished in them yet. Half-court offense can improve, can put the ball on the floor, but ball handling can tighten up. To have the offense run through him at high levels, his decision-making will need to improve. He also needs to improve bringing out the best of his teammates, his leadership. Solid form as a shooter, but underwhelming results as he only shot 23.2% from three and 63.2% from the free throw line over the 2017 Nike EYBL. Post-game is basic and has much room to expand. Can work on limiting turnovers, averaging only 1.7 assists in to 3.2 turnovers per game over the Nike EYBL, can improve as a leader. So obviously some question marks with Marvin Bagley. The dude's size, though, and his athleticism is insane. The NBA comps that he's getting right now is Chris Bosh, which isn't a bad comp at all. It's kind of what we thought about Lauri Markkanen. He was given that sort of comp. Bobby Portis was even given that comp, too. So I don't know. It's kind of lazy when I feel like any big that can shoot the three and is kind of a stretch 4 or 5 player is always given the comp of Chris Bosh. But I thought Wendell Carter Jr.'s comp was kind of funny, and it was kind of interesting because I haven't paid a whole lot of attention to Wendell Carter Jr.'s game, but his comp was Juwan Howard or Al Horford. So if you can get any of that out of any of those guys that might slide down to the 7th or 8th position if the Bulls are drafting, I can't complain about that. And all I'll say this too is take it with a grain of salt. See what these guys do in the tournament. See what comes from the combine or from the NBA pro day when they do all these workouts, because you see guys fly up and down the boards all the time. Look at where Donovan Mitchell was drafted, and look at where Giannis was drafted. Some of these other guys, like, you can find good talent. It's about your scouting, and I'm hoping that the Bulls, with what they're doing right now and their obvious pick on Lauri Markkanen, which looks to be pretty solid, hope they can build off of that, especially if they end up somewhere between 7 to 10. The drafting and the scouting of these players is really going to come into play a factor. So I hope the Bulls have their scouting and their guys ready for this tournament, because they're going to have to see what these guys can do on a national stage when they got a lot of pressure on them.
Indeed.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. New text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. That's once again, 331-979-1369. Save that number in your phone as Locked On Bulls. If you're sitting here listening to us, make sure you're texting in. We want to hear your comments. Join the discussion with us through that number. And even if you're bold enough to leave us a voicemail, we're looking for voicemails to play the best of those sometime this week. So if you've got a rant or something you want to talk about, leave us a voicemail. Nobody's going to pick up that number once again. So 331-979-1369 is your number to call and text. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time on the Nothing But Net channel. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. For Jordan Malley and for Matt Peck, we are out. Hopefully you enjoyed the Memphis Grizzlies, Chicago Bulls Tankathon game tonight. We are out. Have a great night, Bulls Nation.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.